I've been asked many times, what are your swing thoughts as you're swinging?
Well, I try to flat load my feet so I can snap load my power pack. As long as my number two power accumulator doesn't break down, I can reach maximum lag and drag pressure through impact fix. You see, the pivot is the utilization of multiple centers.
Golf is geometrically oriented linear force.
And if you think of all this, hopefully you'll hit shots like this.
Welcome to season two of Full Swing Thoughts, the Fried Egg Golf podcast covering the Netflix show Full Swing, which has lived to see a season two, released on March 6th, the week of Arnold Palmer Invitational. I'm joined by Fried Egg Golf's Joseph LaMagna, who was with us last year for our debut season of Full Swing Thoughts, reacting to season one, before he was really fully on board with Fried Egg Golf. Now you're fully in the cocoon. You and I have been kind of jamming behind the scenes on this, discussing, pulling this together. I don't know how it's going to pop, if it's going to be the number one rated show on Netflix, if it's going to kind of fade and not, you know, there's been less anticipation. But we felt sort of compelled and obliged once we got the screeners. We're recording this in advance of March 6th to get this fired up again. Joseph, thanks for joining me.
Brendan, super excited to do this. I think it's going to be really fun. I know we're going to try to be a little bit more structured with it this year.
Yes.
We're going to try. But I'm really excited. I think that based on, not to get ahead of ourselves, but based on what I've seen so far, just the first episode, like, I'm pretty excited about it. So I'm excited to talk about this with you.
Yeah, when the takes start flying, the structure tends to fall apart. But that there's an effort to keep this structured. Andy, our third musketeer, who was part of Full Swing Thoughts this podcast season one, may be dive bombing in and out. He's got a lot going on as we're recording this. We're preparing for an Ireland trip. There's just a lot of moving parts in our lives right now. So I didn't want to, if we had to wait around for him, this may never get off the ground. So he may dive bomb in, and structure then for sure will be dissipate when he intervenes. But he may or may not join us for a few episodes as he watches along with us. So let's jump into it. Episode one, I'm with you. Like, we're ahead of, as we record this, we've gone a few episodes ahead. We're not done with the season, not making holistic judgments. I'm pretty excited. I'll leave it at that. But episode one is titled The Game Has Changed, Part One. I would say, unlike season one so far, the episodes don't seem to really confine themselves to a player, an event, a subject. I thought this one is primarily about Rory McIlroy and his work with the PGA Tour. And obviously, as they trend towards a merger, in the first few majors of the year pre the merger. But it bounces around, right? It's primarily Rory. It takes place at the Masters, takes place at the PGA, has a little bit of Phoenix Open in it. It doesn't seem as sort of siloed. I know those jumped around too, but the season one was like, here are two guys and here's like a Phoenix Open. Is that fair? Does this seem to be more free flowing in the effort to tell some larger story?
I don't know. I didn't feel that way. I felt like it was kind of, hey, there's this tension between the PGA Tour and Liv and Rory now. Like, you can see how caught up he's been in it. And then it takes you to Rory at Augusta and a Liv player, Brooks, in contention at Augusta, and then gets into the PGA where Liv's a prominent. So I felt like that was the theme there. Maybe a little bit more free-flowing than like the first episode of season one, which was Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, like very confined. But I still think they're gonna make an effort to keep them pretty themed.
Okay, that makes sense. Rory is the primary character for this one within the context of Liv versus the PGA Tour, them getting together at the majors for the first time, that Masters one. It's like, did we feel strongly about that at the Masters? Like, wow, this is Liv versus the PGA Tour. And holy shit, Brooks and Rory are playing together a practice round? I don't know was like, what?
You're getting right into it. I didn't know exactly how we wanted to order the conversation. That's a note I have. Like,
okay,
am I misremembering? Like, was it actually as big of a deal back then when Rory played a practice round with Brooks? Because I don't remember that being my reaction when I heard they were playing together. But I do think seeing some of the footage, it was a little more olive branchy than I remembered it. And maybe like the maybe that's the true side of it, that it really was like a bigger deal than I realized from afar on Twitter. I wasn't at the Masters. So I was curious what you thought about that.
I think we were excited to see those guys all in the same tournament, whatever it was, a Masters or something else. I guess maybe I had inside info. I don't know. I felt like it was pretty solid that Brooks and Rory had been having lunch in South Florida a lot or a bit and were on pretty cordial terms or playing at wherever, a South Florida club. I guess I wasn't surprised to see that. If I were like Rory and Phil or Rory and Bryson or something like that, I would have been more. Maybe I just, in that moment in time, I was at the Players. I sort of remembered there just being a lot of smoke around that, being on good terms, and I guess I wasn't shocked to see it at the time. So that's a scene. Phoenix Open is a scene. Phoenix is sort of like the grab the casual viewer, right? For me, I'm just talking about scenes, the settings for this episode. It's look at all this party, like a bunch of young people drinking, shouting, signs, costumes. That's like, it's just fluff and empty calorie, but it's grab the people, grab the casual viewer setting. Masters, I thought, you know, without getting specifics, was pretty cool. I thought the footage was cool. Like, shit, being inside that media of a press building. It's not a media center. It's a press building is the term. You don't take your phone out and shoot anything. You don't take a picture. You don't take video. And it's like, I don't know, if you're from not inside it, maybe it's cool to see a little bit of like how nice it is in there or nice it is like in some of the locker room, right? So that was good. I think that is like, whether it's super substantive or anything interesting said or a story is told, it's still, that's what you want from this show. You want to be going inside places like Augusta National that you don't otherwise see. Certainly practice rounds. We don't get footage of Masters practice rounds at all. We get on the range shows. And then last but not least, without getting into specifics, the PGA Championship. I thought there was awesome footage inside PGA Championship. PGA Champions dinner, PGA Championship locker room. Like, from a setting perspective, I was, as a golf, like, so one of, you know, we're more avid golf fans, I thought they did a very good job of getting to those places that we don't normally see. Is that fair?
Totally. I think the media center point is great. I had never been in a media center until recently, and I think showing people what it actually looks like and just seeing the configuration of media, like how they ask questions and some of the back and forth that happened in this episode, like I think it does a good job portraying that. Yeah, a lot of the access, I think Rory's a great person to be shooting, because I think we learned from the first season that some of the conversations, intimate conversations with spouses and stuff, yeah, they don't always feel the most natural. Sometimes they feel contrived. And totally. I think with Rory, he's so used to being on camera and so used to being famous that I think a lot of the reactions we get from him feel a little bit more authentic than maybe some other players, because again, Rory's been around a camera his whole life. So yeah, that was striking to me. Like some of the reactions, even with him in the locker room, that we get look a little bit more natural to me than like Ian Poulter throwing clubs in the first season.
Yeah, I think I don't know. Maybe we're just being hoodwinked, but I think Rory's generally probably pretty genuine. He probably doesn't give us everything he's thinking or give us all he knows, but I think he opens it up pretty quickly. I don't think it's contrived at all for some sort of image he wants to portray. You know, it's hype up the show in any way. It's just like, this is how I feel about it and this is how it is. All right. For this season, we want to come up with some made-up awards for each episode, the titles of which we just whip up quickly. It doesn't have to be best actor or best line or whatever, the most revelatory. It could be completely made up. Best club throw, best putt that didn't go, like just completely made up from episode to episode. So you came up with two. Give me your category, and I'll try to guess based on the episode. Your first category award.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm expecting these awards to be extremely open-ended, and if you hit me with something pretty down the line that I was expecting, I think I'd be caught off guard. So okay. I went the off-the-wall route. I'm hoping that they strike the right balance of you having a chance at guessing them, but them not being too obvious. That's kind of the way I'm trying to go, so that also people who are listening to this can play along too. So maybe these will be obvious, but go ahead and dunk if you know it right away. My first one is the I would not want that guy coaching my kid's sports team award from episode one.
I would not want that guy.
A little intense.
Is it Claude Harmon III?
Oh, yeah. I feel like he comes across as a real red ass in this episode.
All right. Well, I had an award, the biggest blowhard award. And as you can imagine, Claude clean sweeps both of them. So a little bit of intel, or I guess behind the scenes insight. So he went nuts on that PGA after he won the PGA. Remember he gave it, I think it was Adam Shupak, right? Calling out names to everybody.
Keeping receipts.
And the headline for that article is not Claude Harmon III goes off. It's Brooks Koepka's coach. And this was after Koepka kind of took pains, right, to not call out people, to not strut, to not be a sort of the flag that Greg Norman could wave. And then Brooks wakes up Monday morning and it's Brooks Koepka's coach. He might as well have talked. I think Brooks, everything I understand, was really pissed off about that. Like, really
at
pissed.
Claude.
And yes. And yeah, they didn't break up. They stayed together, all that stuff. Like, I don't think he probably loved seeing that. So I guess one of my things I was trying to figure out was, when did this interview take place, right? Because this is the Claude Harmon in that. Like, I think Claude kind of kept his head down after that. Or as much as Claude does, he always has had pretty good relationship with media, a bunch of different media, because he talks. He wants to talk. But yes, for me, biggest blowhard, when he said, I was keeping receipts. Like, who cares, man? Like, who gives a F? Like, you're not the player. You're Claude Harmon III. Like, who cares? Like, that's like me saying, I was keeping receipts about who was talking shit about, Charles Howell III. Like, you know what I mean? I guess he has an association with his players, but no one cares. He's a third party that's incidental. And to him to say, like, I was keeping receipts was a little bit too self-indulgent for me, like a blowhard quote. What about you? Scared you off? Doesn't want you coaching his kids?
I mean, that, like, the whole I was keeping receipts energy, I think there's a line in there where he's like, for Brooks to be in contention at the Masters, but then come back and win the PGA, like, to come back and say F you is a hell of a story. And he just, like, turns this, there's just this little underlying anger that felt to be behind all of his statements that I was like, this is the kind of guy that gets thrown out of his kid's baseball game. Like, that's the kind of energy I was picking up on.
I mean, I think it's probably a hard existence. You're known as, like, Butch's kid. And for him, there may be some, like, sort of, like, how do I get out from under my shadow like that, right? And I don't want to make this the Claude Harmon III podcast, actually, but you know what I mean? I found him, like, you could tell why Netflix would like him, right? Because he jumps in, he shouts, I was keeping receipts, F you. I think maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. In episode two, he has a preposterous quote about live players being pioneers and stuff like that. So, like, you could see why the Netflix cameras would go for it. What's your next award category?
My second and final award is the Unnecessary Jab Award. Somebody takes a completely unnecessary jab that was pretty shocking to me. And I'm interested if who you think took the unnecessary jab, who wins that award. These are very open-ended.
Oh, I think I know. Is it Mito Pereira?
Justin Thomas, Mito Pereira.
Yeah.
Brendan, what did you think of that?
I thought it was awesome. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was great. I'll let you, what did you think? I'll leave it at that. I won't expound.
Wow.
What did you think?
I actually found it to be extremely distasteful. And he is taking a shot at Mito Pereira, who, like, wipes a drive outright on the 72nd hole of last year's PGA with a lead, which is why Justin Thomas gets into the playoff and wins. Mito Pereira is not, like, some accomplished golfer who's also sitting in the room and, like, in on the joke, thinks it's funny, Like, he's won majors too. I mean, this is a real, like, punching at somebody that blew up in the biggest moment of his young career, has no profile. Like, JT's laughing with all these other champions in the room. I understood the joke, but I thought it was actually, like, very distasteful. So we're on opposite sides of this one.
I don't think those can be mutual. I think those can be mutually exclusive. Like, I thought it was awesome for, like, I enjoyed it, and it was in poor form. I agree with you that it was a bit distasteful. One of the sort of the book on JT among some players is that he punches down. Like, he's thirsty for famous people to, like, get on his Instagram, or, you know what I mean? He won't go at the bigger boys, but he's, like, happy to talk shit about, like, little, you know, punches down. I've heard that precise phrase sometimes with him. I would say this was an instance of it. I guess I just didn't see it coming out of nowhere. Yeah. And, like, you could tell Brooks thought it was hilarious from the footage. I thought it was great footage. It was great television. It was great for the show.
Yes.
It was a real, like, zinger that I would remember. I'm not suggesting it's, like, in the perfect taste. Phil was probably uncomfortable with it. Like, Rory was laughing. Like, I think it's, in the moment of tension, he's a LIV guy, too. Like, it's a pop. Like, it plays into that storyline, too, of popping at a guy he might consider sort of a traitor or something like that. It was great. And for me, it built off the JT quote prior to that, where he said, you know, a lot of those guys I didn't talk to before, and that has nothing to do with LIV, right? There's plenty of guys on that tour I didn't talk to before and still have no desire to talk to, but it's not because of that decision. It just might help with it a little bit. I thought, like, I love that. I feel like JT, for me, was a little, he was, like, political, too much of a politician in season one, right? And Mike Thomas gave us the most color on JT. I think JT's been great through these first couple episodes. He's not been in them a lot. But for me, like, I didn't crumb up with this award. I thought it was, like, most revelatory or surprising kind of quote machine was Justin Thomas. And I thought he was, like, I thought he was pretty candid. Like, look, I don't like a lot of those guys. And I didn't like them before. And this has just helped with it. And I think that's a really candid thing where a lot of guys, Spieth wouldn't say that. I think Spieth kind of beats around the bush, right? And Ricky probably wouldn't say that either. Rory would, maybe. I found it to be candid. And then, like, that, and then the Mito, like, up haymaker, really, comes later. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I found it to be really entertaining and what you want from this kind of show.
Look, I found it entertaining. I agree. This is exactly why this show is awesome. Like, the footage, being able to see stuff like that, like, those are the moments that I'm after. All I'm saying is, it left a bad taste in my mouth that Justin Thomas would take a swipe like that, not at a veteran who's been around for 10 years and had a bunch of chances. Like, he wasn't popping Lee Westwood. He was popping Mito Pereira.
Right.
Like, well, if Mito was in the room, I'd have no problem with it. But it just felt to me like it was a little beneath Justin Thomas to take some kind of shot at a guy that in the biggest moment of his career left a drive out right in the creek like that. I really did think it was pretty distasteful, but I agree with you. Okay. I feel like Justin Thomas has shown an edge that is both beneficial for the show and revelatory about his personality.
He's been a big winner for me in limited role, like in the first couple episodes. All right, my second
to be
award,
clear on that, are you're saying a winner for you in terms of learning more about him, or a winner for you that you find it endearing?
No, I like appreciate seeing a little bit of him. What I feel like, honest, candid JT.
Sure.
I don't know if it's endearing. I wouldn't say it's turned me off, though. I wouldn't say it's turned me off, or if I found it to be like I don't like him because of it. My second award category, I did blow hard, overlapped a little bit with you, with Claude. Hey, this is like one of my favorite nicknames, and I will never use it because I don't know anything about teaching professional swing teaching, but when people call him Fraud Harmon the Third, I just like I laugh every single time. It's so mean, and it's probably it has no merit to it. Like, people will say that in a bar, like it's just ridiculous. Anyways, I don't think it has any merit to it, but it's amusing nickname. All right, my second award is the most overplayed narrative award. And this is a reality show. They have to thread narratives and hit narratives. This one, I said most overplayed narrative in this episode one.
I'll go with, this is hard. I feel like I'm taking a quiz. This is going to be interesting as we do these episodes, because people at listening to this might get these answers right faster than we do. I'm going to go with the fact that Liv performed well in the Masters, like totally changed everything and showed that this league is here to stay.
Is that your overplay narrative? No, but there's a lot of narratives that they hammer. So there's options. That was a good one from this episode for me. And look, they get the talking heads. A lot of them are our colleagues. I think they do a fine job. It's a weird position. Like, are you speaking to a general audience? Are you speaking to someone who knows nothing about golf? And you have to paint in pretty broad brush and cliches and like really broad strokes. And sometimes you might overhype something or overplay something. A little bit of that commentary from the talking heads, the media people that they have fill in the gaps, and then also how they told the story, really overplayed that, like, Rory was basically incapable of playing any good golf because he had this burden of leading the PGA Tour. It completely negates his golf of the last 2 years. Like, he had a bad Masters. His PGA, his swing was all over the place, still had like a top 10, right? He hit it all everywhere. But he was number one in the world to start the year. He had in 2023 or 2022, like an incredible year while also serving in this role. It, like, and we'll get to later episodes, but like it totally negates his US Open performance, which was, you know, or the British Open the prior year. And they just hammer this, like, you can't be a golfer and a politician at the same time, was one quote.
That was crazy.
I forget who said that. I just have it down. But that's not, like, to pick on someone. It's just, like, because this was an overall narrative they were hitting the whole time. They paint Rory as having, like, this disastrous year. And he just didn't. And they neglects to mention everything he did the prior year, everything he did at the USO, everything he did. And like in a big way, another narrative was like it kind of motivated him and juiced him and got his attention to play better golf as serving as this sort of adversarial leader and commander of an army. So that really, I thought, was overplayed because they had some missed cut at Masters footage that they wanted to really crowbar. Is that fair?
I think that's mostly fair. I agree with you. It's not like he'd won a bunch of majors in the years preceding and then has this fall off year in 2023. Like 2023 was a pretty standard Rory year, a good year in some ways. Yeah. So I agree with you, though. I will say one of my takeaways from watching this episode and also from like just going out on tour and seeing all the obligations these guys have is like, I'd like to see Rory McIlroy's calendar. Like it really,
oh, I've got between that in there. Yeah.
Between like Dude Perfect shoots and like going to the Puttery and all of these things
so
he's doing.
Bullshit. Yeah.
And sitting on Zooms. It is like, I'd love to see that calendar and how much practice time you get compared to somebody who takes on fewer obligations. So I agree with you on the narrative part that it was a little overblown that you can't do two things at once. At the same time, though, it did make me think like, man, how it would be difficult to do all of those things and play at a high level. So I'm maybe not all the way with you, but I agree that it was an overplayed narrative. Is that fair?
Yes. I just think like I can lament him having to do all this bullshit. Like that's a clear sort of insight from this episode. But we knew that already. He has to do so much BS. And I guess that where we talk about the current state, it's like so many of these guys, Patrick Cantlay, he does good stuff. He does stuff for charity. He has foundations. He does like Xander, those guys. And then you go farther down, like Sam Ryder, who I was saying, like guys making $100,000 now because like what is it? What is it worth to you? Like how much more money is it worth to have to do all this stuff? Because That's what the money's for. He makes a lot more money than a lot of golfers, but there's also a lot of guys making a lot more money because of him that don't have to do this stuff, that are kind of drafting, that do a lot.
To be fair, he doesn't have to do all that stuff either. Some of it he has to do, right? And I guess that's kind of the point. You don't have to serve on the pack.
Yeah, yeah. There's just all these guys below him making great, much better cheddar now and doing a lot less to have gotten there. And I think he did put in a lot of the time.
Fair. What's your third award?
My third award I had was the Not So Subtle Transition Award, which this show is just excellent at. I have to give them commendations for that. So they just jump. They are really good at hammering you over the head, like almost every episode, last year, this year, with going from one scene to the next or one quote to the next that is really shows you contrast.
I mean, that's definitely a note I have, that they do an amazing job with that. I'm trying to think of one in particular that you'd be, because it's often like somebody doubting themselves and then cuts to them like with the trophy, they're winning. Like they do a really good job. I don't know what your transition is here though. What is it?
I had two options. They go from Phoenix Open to Orange County National, like very conspicuous, like screaming. And then it's just like a couple flags blowing in the wind and like okay, Brooks signing autographs. It was like,
I like this.
And if you're a live person, your live bots could not have appreciated that, right? You're going from the Phoenix Open insanity. They can frame anything they want, right? I'm not saying Orange County National was good at all, but they did a good job of showing a scene and then like crickets. Right. The other one, which was incredible, this is it, was Rory talking, I think, to Harry or walking off, talking to Shane Lowry. They're walking through the rain at the PGA.
Yep.
He goes, it's hard to go out there and shoot 66.
Yep.
And like a minute later,
yep,
they have the CBS coverage dubbed over Brooks putting in with Nance saying, 66 for the second straight day. And I was like, holy really shit, good. That's great production. It's great. Like, this is where Rory is. Talking about how, you know, it's hard to go out there and shoot 66. And then they have Nance saying it on the broadcast. So this show is, I have an example of this for episode 2 already. Like, this show is very good at doing that from a storytelling and drama perspective.
I actually think it's noticeably better from season 1 even. And I thought they did a good job with a lot of that in season 1. But it feels a little bit cleaner to me in season 2 so far. So I agree. That's a great award.
All right, let's rip through the notebook. Bunch of miscellaneous notes. You wanna go? You wanna just let it rip? You've got a bunch.
I have tons. I mean,
one question I had:
did it strike you that there was? It looked like they had locker room access at Orange County National.
Yeah,
and I was so that was kind of an interesting. I was curious what your perspective was on that, because there's obviously the deal with the PGA Tour to be getting all this access, but like, what does that indicate about some kind of deal with Liv?
They went to Live London, if you remember, the very first Live event
in the
ever.
Room.
But I don't. Yeah, it might have been sort of peripheral coverage. I don't know. It's interesting. Like you see the credits, and it's like special thanks to like 35 PGA Tour people, and the credits at the end. And there's no Live. It's the Masters and the four majors, and I don't know. But yeah, they did get in access, so maybe there is a little bit more cooperation there.
Yeah.
What else?
That was a note I had. I mean, there's the shotgun start and fried egg appearance. Didn't know if you felt like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's pointing at the TV like you hear your name, but I didn't know if you had any notes on that.
I have it in there. I mean, I found it interesting. Rory is the high-minded intellectual. Rory is listening to the shotgun start in his car, and Brooks is going to Jake Paul's podcast, the Warren Dueling podcast, in episode 1 here. I'm kidding. Two Cleveland people, the Paul brothers from the west side of Cleveland. It's crazy. I didn't, you know, I'd heard that might happen. It might be in the show, and it's interesting to see in his car. Friday Golf Podcast and Shotgun Start, along with DJ Khaled and Encanto, which my kids love. Yes.
Speaking of smooth transitions, would have been good to cut to him in his car and you hear that dun 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 dun. Get the full Shotgun Start music. What do you have in your notes?
I thought it was interesting the teaser. Spieth is in it, but he wasn't in the poster, right? I wasn't expecting to see Spieth. That's just like the coming this season. He wasn't in it a lot, but I just was surprised to see him. Surprised to see Big J. I guess It seems like he's like a sit down feature interview type person for this. Maybe this is, you have to have him because of the merger and all that stuff. But I was a little bit surprised.
One of my notes on Jay was that the first clip of him is him like stumbling over his words talking to somebody.
Not
a world-class communicator.
What was it he stumbled over?
I don't know exactly what the line was. He's talking to somebody else at the puttery and he says, so you're trying to encourage, and it just comes out really poorly, whatever message he's trying to get across. And that's like the first glimpse we have of him talking.
Yep. Yep. He's interesting to see him. Another note is Colin Morikawa is super deferential to Rory. I was a little surprised to hear him say that. Like, Rory has earned the right to be here, earned the right to be the face of the PGA Tour. I'll follow him. Like, I don't know. I think Colin and his people around him don't fancy him themselves that much that way. And it was interesting to see him that deferential. I enjoyed Jenna Sims as an earnest golf pundit saying, you know, weighting resumes. What matters are majors. Yep. Nobody cares about PGA Tour wins.
Have that Jenna in my notes. Sims. That's a big quote.
Has weighed in on that. James Pyatt making his one, only, and maybe last appearance ever on Full Swing, giving, I think it's Brooks or someone, a big hug, 5-star in the middle of the locker room, front and center, James Pyatt. We may never see him again on Full Swing. Good to see him. I loved Sean Martin getting a shout out, PGAtour.com, Sean Martin. He's everywhere. He's in like 3 scenes. There's no ROM footage for the Masters, and he won the Masters. And he's not signed on. He doesn't agree to this. It just was weird. Like, this is primarily the Masters episode, I think. And it's told through sort of Brooks and Liv coming in and Rory's MC. But it just felt like there was nothing about ROM winning the Masters, which...
I think this kind of goes back to maybe some of the criticism we gave last season. Like, why wasn't Cam Smith a bigger part of the story? I think I've just come to realize that that's not what they're doing. Like, they're doing, this is Rory and Brooks here and intertwining those stories. And they're not going to cover the Masters like in full and give the full, like, here's what John Rahm did, which I've just accepted.
Yep. Yep. Go ahead. What's another note you got?
I mean, small note, but I just think that makes golf really difficult. This is not criticism of the Netflix production crew, but it shows Morikawa and then it gives him the text world number 7. And then a couple scenes later, it cuts to Max Homa. It says world number 7. And it's just difficult for people probably who aren't that big of golf fans to realize that like the official world golf rankings, like how that works and that the event was 2 months later and they're, rankings had changed. Like, that's just a difficult thing golf deals with. Really small note, not a criticism of Netflix, but golf's not the most approachable sport, and I think that was a pretty good example. I have the Rory talking about needing to completely reboot his swing in the locker room after the PGA when he's sitting down with after he's all wrapped up and he's like, my technique's nowhere near where it used to be. Even though he finished T7, he didn't play well that week. And hearing him talk about doing a complete reboot, I think is notable.
This is the goods right there for me. This is like, I don't know if this was an award or we should talk about this first, but like, this is like exactly what as us like kind of avid golf fans, hardcore golf fans want from something like this. We can see the shots. We can tabulate the stats, gain what's weak, what's strong. Like, we don't get this kind of candid access. I thought this was the goods for me. This is like makes an episode entirely worthwhile. If this is how the season goes, I think golf fans will really enjoy it. It's an incredible insight you don't get. Like, a guy at a pretty probably raw, vulnerable moment, and he's letting it rip, and they got it. And he said, you know, he goes, I fucking shit myself to left pins. My technique is nowhere as good as it used to be. I almost feel like I want to do a complete reboot. It's the only way I feel like I'm going to break through. I can fucking top 10 in my head, but I'm not good enough to win. Pretty vulnerable statement. I'm not good enough to win. I'm not at the stage in my life where I can do these two week boot camps. So he's, you know, I don't know, like, he's older at this point. He has to redo it all. I don't know if that's what happened between then and LA, because he was arguably the best player in the field in LA, you know, up there. So I thought that was the goods for me. And Brooks wins, and he says, fuck, someone in my era's got more majors than I have. And this is everything. This is everything for me. This is from the horse's mouth in the heat of battle, not in some like 30 for 30 that's 20 years later. It's while they're playing. This is why we watch sports. This is what we think we're supposed to care about with golf, like the majors. And these guys don't play head to head. They're not like, you know, in a game playing offense and defense. But like, do they measure each other like this? Do they try to race each other? Do they feel these pressures, especially the greats, the legends who measure their careers by majors? And he says it like this is like an all timer for me, and like redeems the show in a huge way. And maybe that's Rory. And if he was on a podcast or something, would have redeemed, you know, carried the pot. But Netflix got it. And for me, that is what we want. Not, you know, what we would hope we this is what we think from the outside. But do we know it for sure? Who's motivated? Like, are these guys bothered by this? And we have it right here. What do you think of that quote?
Loved it. Completely agree with you. I think that's why the episode worked for me, that you have them doing the practice round together at Augusta, showing some of that kinship, but also then getting a lens into the competitiveness. They know how many majors each other has. And with that, like Rory going out of his way to congratulate Brooks in the parking lot after he wins. And like that, I think all of that worked really well together. That's footage we never would have seen otherwise. So I'm with you. I thought it was awesome.
Yep. Other notes you got? Anything else? Go ahead.
I'll just say, main overarching note, I felt like some criticism we gave season one, it didn't feel like it was always capturing the essence of what it felt like to be a golf fan that year. And for me, it seems like this season already is doing a better job of that. Like the main notes I have, Rory missing the cut at the Masters was the story of the Masters and Liv being in contention. And it did a good job of showing that. Showed bad shots from Rory. Like, it felt like it shied away from that a little bit in season one. And I actually think we're capturing the essence of what it was like to be a golf fan in 2023 for hardcore golf fans, and making it approachable for somebody that might just be new to the sport from watching Netflix. So I think it's doing a good job. And that was a big note I had.
The narration around the Masters now post Rom defection was pretty great. We've got two big brutes from two different tours, you know, when it was Brooks versus Rom, and that's not the case anymore. And there was a quote about, if one of their players were to win the Masters, that would change the entire dynamic of pro golf. Well, you know, retroactively, they did win the Masters.
Right.
It was a great episode. And last but not least, I think this is also, in addition to Pyatt, the most we'll ever get of Phil via PGA parking lot. His coach trying to block the camera. There's a very clear scene where his coach is trying to, I think it's Andrew Getson, is trying to back up in the camera. And they're getting them in the Champions Dinner. That Champions Dinner footage is awesome. Even if you don't get like the most substantive quote out of it, I think that was awesome. I have no idea who's sitting next to Phil. There's some young guy.
Do you know who that is,
Joseph?
No, I don't know who that was.
Some guy in a beard who's not a champion, I don't think. He was younger. I have no idea who that was. But that was great. Like, that's the most Phil footage I think we'll get. And that had to be so, so awkward. But a great episode. I think the Rory quotes, really the locker room stuff at the end, really made it for me. Anything else you want to get before we wrap up?
No,
episode,
we hit them all.
Here.
Only note was him saying that Rory saying he's probably closer with Jay Monahan than any other players on tour. But I don't think that should come as a huge surprise.
That. Yeah, I had that.
I think most people who follow golf really closely probably know that they have a lot of back and forth. But I think for a newcomer, that's an important detail to include.
Yeah, and you're feeding into some of the Lanto and the conspiracy theorists and stuff like that a little bit. But yes, he says it. He doesn't hide from it. And last but not least, this episode, a kind of an unqualified success because Blocky is nowhere to be found. It's the PGA Championship. There's not a single mention of Blocky. I think a shot or highlight or vision of Blocky. Is that right?
I think you're right. Blocky. I was wondering, that was a thought that crossed my mind. Is he going to watch this episode and be pissed off? Which, of course, he is.
All right, that does it. Full Swing Thoughts, episode one. Subscribe. You know, rate, review, do whatever you do with podcasts. We'll be back. Hit on episode 2 here in a minute.